Hey guys, and welcome back to another Schlock and Awe quickie review. As always, I'm Lindsay Wilkins, and this time around, we're going to Britain, Britain, Britain. No, thankfully, it's not the show Little Britain. We're actually going to be looking at a new Studio Canal produced movie called Wicked Little Letters, which came out in Britain last year, but is finally arriving in Australian cinemas on the 21st of March. Cannot remember what month we're in. This, of course, is directed by Thea Sharrock. It is starring the wonderful Jessie Buckley, Olivia Colman, and Jaina Vasan, the very dopey Hugh Skinner, Timothy Spall, the wonder amazing Gemma Jones, Joanna Scanlon, Eileen Atkins, Lolly Adepo. Of course, Jason Watkins shows up as a nasty prosecutor. Because of course he is, and Matilda herself, Alicia Weir. Before I get into the review of course, Wicked Little Letters, I'm going to make this a triple. Because I think overall, Wicked Little Letters fits into a very healing comedy style movie. And I kind of wanted to look at two other British comedies that one, of course, a famous healing comedy, and the other one, very much taking off that vibe and then doing the 90s version of what both these movies are. After Wicked Little Letters, I want to be looking at the 1949 Passport to Pimlico, and then, of course, the 1996 You Will Cry movie, Blast Off. I think all these movies have very something in common, as we'll get into when I talk about Wicked Little Letters, especially the Passport to Pimlico and then Brassed Off, because they all have this similar thing of how there's a very specific kind of British comedy, one that is very comforting, one that kind of makes everything okay by the end, and one that is about Britishness at its core and British unity, which all three are very politically pointed movies, which is also very interesting because these are Sunday afternoon movies you watch with your mum, all three of them, even with Wicked Little Letters, which will swear its ass off, but it's really, as I get into it, it's very weird swearing. So let's start with a new one that's coming out on the 21st. As I said, directed by Thea Sharrock. And of course, with Wicked Little Letters, aka you foxy ass fucker and sad smelly bitch.
Dear Edith, you foxy ass old whore. Carry on. You really are a tricksy old fucker. And you're a sad, stinky bitch.
In the end, I think it's just jealousy.
I think we know who it is.
Love thy neighbour, and I tried, but
I'll get you in the ball sack!
She's heinous.
Edith, I didn't do it.
I believe you may be charging an innocent.
A woman police officer. Oh, look, flying pig.
I've got a daughter at home. Why would I risk it all?
You want fucking in the nose holes, you old beetle.
Beetle?
Right.
If you meddle in my case, these will be on your wrists.
In prison, Rose may find some kindred spirits.
In prison?
No, no, not the murderers or the rapists. I'm thinking more the drunks and the queers, maybe.
Look, I love the swearing in this movie, first of all. It's wonderful and weird. Now, this is actually, like, all these movies are based on a real thing. The Wicked Little Letters is actually based on a real-life case. You can go look it up. I'm not going to spoil it too much in this movie, because I don't think the actual case in Little Southampton, where this movie is set in 1920, is as well known. It's one of those weird curiosities, even though it was a major British national scandal and even got into question time at Parliament, which means there was enough petitioning for this to become a thing. A woman played by Olivia Colman, Edith Swan played by Belle, starts getting these poisoned pen letters. They are sweary, they are horrible, they are calling her a sad, smelly bitch. They are calling her a foxy ass fucker. They are just hurling insults. I guess the modern work equivalent now is trolling. Like, someone is sending her these letters. So the blame and the accusations go directly onto Jessie Buckley's character, Rose Gooding, who is an Irish immigrant, single mother, This happened in 1920. This is set in 1920. And it goes on from there. I really loved Wicked Little Letters. I can see a lot of the reviews are kind of, it's light. It's really not doing anything. I would argue that it is. I'm going to argue all three of these kinds of, all these movies are actually doing something, even though they are baked in a cake of coziness and sentimentality and movies that are designed to uplift you and make you feel good about the world, even though they've got something else baked into the dish. Wicked Little Letters is female empowerment. That is added, but it is kind of also more than that because this is 1920. First World War has ended. Many, many sons never came home. Many, many people were killed. And of course, during wartime, women were in the factories. They were not being ladylike. They were out there and working. Same thing with World War II. They like to go outside, as I like to say. So when the war ends, and also during this time, British have given women the vote. Women's suffrage has been achieved. And they have the vote, which is a very big sticking point. And also, I think, little known fact, an author called Anthony Trollope, which is very important because this is about the post. These are letters that are being posted to these different people, just flinging the most oddest insults you can possibly imagine. As I said, Foxy comes up a lot, like that's an insult. The post box was introduced into British society by an author called Anthony Trollope in about 1852 or 1853, which he said he later regretted. He was also a civil servant, which is why he introduced the post box. It's not just like the author went in and went, I have an idea. This will be great. They just planted one in on a corner of London. He later regretted it because he suddenly realized women could post their own letters. They didn't have to go through their husbands, their fathers, or any servants, which you would have to do before a post box. There was more anonymity, I guess I would say, which again goes into these letters because they were never signed of who they are. They were just things piling in the mail calling you a sad, smelly bitch. Look, I've been calling everyone a sad, smelly bitch since I've seen Wicked Little Letters. I like the phrase. So there's this thing again baked into this very silly, calm, very sweet, overly sweet sometimes caper where everything's going to work out at the end. Everyone's going to get what they want in a sense. But it is really about women getting their own voice. A good comparison you could make with Wicked Little Letters is the show The Thick of It, which of course follows based on an actual Tony Blair communications officer. The show is incredibly sweary. I mean, he Armando Iannucci turns swearing into poetry. The letters in Wicked Little Liars is not that. It is something very, very different. It is a burst of rage. This is coming from a person who does not have an outlet. And when she does have an outlet, okay, mild spoilers, it is just a release of pure rage. So the letters don't actually make any sense. When you actually see what the letters are, they make no sense. They're just a random of insults and fucker said a lot. This is kind of what this movie is. This is a flux, a time in flux, a time of change. Women are starting to get their own age, a little bit more agency than they had. You also have more immigration because Jessie Buckley's character, like herself, is Irish. After World War I, and even beforehand, there was a huge influx of Irish immigration, especially to Britain, as well as America, Australia, everywhere else. There was a huge amount of anti-Irish sentiment running through, and that is run through Jessie Buckley's character, who is the freest of the characters. She does not give a flying feck about what you think about her. She will go out, she will drink, she will swear. She is not ladylike. All the other women are expected to be women. It's all made up. You're meant to play this role, and if you don't, something is wrong with you and you need to be put down. This is kind of what Wicked Little Letters are saying. And yes, it turns into a delicious camp with a group of all sorts of women getting together to solve this one problem because the men think it's, they're more offended by the language than actually what's going on, which I think this group of women get together, they solve the issue, they make everything okay, and justice is served. it's very streamlined in that way. And I think when I get into the other two movies, you're going to find that as well. But Wicked Little Letters is delightful. Seeing Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley go head to head is something wonderful. I think those two actresses, along with Angina Bassan, and also actually Timothy Spall. I mean, Timothy Spall is playing the worst person in the world, and yet he does give his horribleness texture. Like, he is the worst, but there's something, just because Timothy Spall is a great actor, he's just giving more context and breadth to the evilness of his character. But the three other women are kind of giving more context and texture to their characters that I think are that are on the page. But that's why you hire really good actors sometimes. They can see what this character is. And I think there is a very much a performance role that each of the women are playing. Even Gemma Jones, who I adore, is playing a very specific role, except for maybe Jolynn Scanlon, who is also actually in the thick of it. She's just herself. Look, she's going to cook an egg in the morning, and then she'll be ready for you. Her hygiene is even concerning even to her. She really likes her pigs. I would recommend this movie. It is, even though there is, take your mum. I mean, look, I don't know why everyone thinks mums, if you suddenly turn into a mum, you suddenly don't like sex and swearing in movies. This is the kind of, or your grandma, I don't know why, but take your grandma and your mother. They are going to enjoy this. It is a light, fizzy comedy that actually has something really interesting baked into it, especially when you take into the post context. Like, the British post office history is actually really interesting. More people go to jail than you actually think with this history. It's just witty, it's funny, it's fizzy, it's kind of puts you in a good mood. You're giggling. Sometimes you'll hear a phrase like fuck you up the nose and it makes you laugh. It is just a really cool little well-done movie about a little known story that I'm really happy is now getting a second life and people may learn about it. I mean, it is much more convoluted than the actual movie. Many people were actually arrested. It kind of turned into a little bit of a witch hunt. This one is kind of much more condensed and through line into the feel-good movie route, and that is okay. The feel-good movie is a genre unto itself, and I think when I get into the other two movies, that feel-good element is a way of delivering an idea. You want to deliver an idea, you put a bit of sugar on it, a spoonful of sugar on it, as Mary Poppins would say. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, the phrase woman police officer is said so often that it does become a running joke on purpose. Yes, is this, could have been a little bit more spaced out, but it is just short, condensed to the point, and it's going to make you smile. And I do think there is something behind that, a frivolity, I can't say the word, but that is kind of what I'm getting at. Absolutely go see it, because I think this is very much in the tradition of the British comedy of the Ealing studio comedies. That is what I see, how I see Wicked Little Letters. This was a studio that is still going, by the way. It is very famously known for a 10 years of comedies that were produced at the studio that are considered some of the greatest early British comedies ever made. And because of that, they're kind of lumped together. They are very different. I am talking, of course, about the movie Passport to Flamenco.
Do you know whose crest this is? The Duke of Burgundy.
This charter specifically makes them natives of Burgundy.
Do you mean that these Londoners are technically Burgundians?
Indubitably.
I'm a foreigner.
Only the Duke himself can appoint a council. And as there is no such person... but you're wrong. There is such person. I am the Duke of Burgundy.
We have no powers to negotiate.
Well, sir, I suggest you come back when you have.
Legally, this is Burgundy. Head office no longer has any jurisdiction over this bank.
Russian books, this is Burgundy.
Coupon, this is Burgundy.
Your export department, this is Burgundy.
Burgundy! Burgundy! Burgundy!
Burgundy! Which, of course, is part of a group that is Kind Hearts and Coronets. Whiskey galore, because there is an exclamation point. Run for Your Money, The Lavender Hill Mob, The Man in the White Suit. The Lady Killers. Unfortunately, the only thing wrong with Lady Killers is that Alec Guinness is not asking for waffles forthwith. These are a group of comedies that kind of defined Britishness in a way, I guess is the best way. But very much more than that, they are about British unity. Now, okay, Lady Killers is probably the one standing on the other side, kind of giving everyone the side eye, because that is a very snark, dark comedy. But everything else, I could say Kind Hearts and Coronets, Whiskey Galore, the Lavender Hill Mob, the man in the white suit kind of might be hanging out with Lady Killers. But this is post-war Britain. The propaganda thing was in full force. They were still making movies about British unity because everyone still had ration books. They had them, well, I think nearly into the 60s, where you couldn't just go buy what you want. You had to have a ration book of like, I can have 2 eggs and this much flour and this much bread and all that kind of thing. It stayed well into the 50s. In fact, I have a friend who's from Newcastle and she showed me hers one. She has like a key. I don't know why I have this, but she was born in the 50s and she still has this old ration book. It's fascinating. You get a stamp. These movies are about, as I said, British unity and working together. And I think Wicked Little Letters absolutely fits into this mold because it's often about a group of people working up against a big government force, which Brastoff is definitely that. This is definitely Letters to Pamilco. And this is very much Wicked Little Letters because it is a group of women who have to break, who have to stand up against a male-driven society and go, you know what? You need to look at this more closely in a very specific way and not just look at the face value of these letters. What are these letters actually saying? What are they doing? Yeah, so we're going to get into Passport to Flamenco. I think I'm really not pronouncing that correctly. If you know me, when don't I pronounce anything correctly? Anyway, this is from 1949. It, of course, produced and shot at Ealing Studios, which is a studio in London. It is directed by Henry Cornelius, written by T.E.B. Clarke, who actually wrote a few of these movies. And it stars, this is actually one of the big ones not to star Alec Guinness, by the way, which was kind of weird because he's actually in a lot of them. If you want to see something amazing, watch Kind Hearts and Coronet. It's amazing because it's about this guy who's basically murdering his way through this wealthy family so he can inherit this manor's wealth. These family members are played by Alec Guinness. It's amazing. But this one stars, as I said, Stanley Holloway, who of course is in the amazing Brief Encounter, the great Margaret Rutherford, who played one of the original Mrs. Marples, Jane Hinton, Roy Carr, Charles Hartree, so a lot of character actors from the 1940s. Okay, this is the one that's very loosely based on a concept. In Ottawa during the Second World War, the Dutch royal family princess gave birth to a child because that was a royal family. This part of Ottawa became part of the Netherlands and when you leave a state, it was no longer Canadian is what it is, because the plot of Passport to Flamenco is unexploded bomb that's kind of been there since the war. They kind of go under it and find all this buried treasure. Like, it's a cavern of stuff, which they find out all belongs to an old Duke of Burgundy. And then they find out that this little slice of London is not in fact British. It is in fact Burgundian. And the amount of times Burgundian is said, especially by Margaret Rutherford, who's a Burgundian doctor, a doctor in Burgundian, is extraordinary. This movie's only 124. Like, it's not long. And half of it saying, "Where now, Burgundian?" It starts off slower than a lot of these movies. Usually they start with a rip and a crackle and you're into it. This one's kind of a slow burn, because everyone's all being very British and everyone's obeying the British law and have their ration books. Secede from word. So they find out that this little suburb of London is now essentially French, which they first take it to mean they do not have to follow the bureaucracy and the rule of law that is being enforced on them by another government. This is all sounding very Brexit, I know. I was thinking about this when they were talking. They were using very specific language. I'm like, did they watch this movie? I'm surprised I didn't see the bus talking about the NHC or their health system over there. So they decide to secede from Britain and become Burgundian, which is all great in the beginning because they don't have to ration. They can just kind of live the lives they want. They're not subject to these bureaucratic rules that is decided for them by this other EU-style government. And then they realize that it all goes to shit pretty quickly. One, the British government decide, right, if you don't want to be British, then you're not British. That means you need the passport to leave the suburb. In fact, you cannot leave. Barbed wire becomes a feature very, very quickly. It's like this movie was predicting the future with the Berlin Wall. And Brexit. I don't know what to tell you. The people start having to figure out how to have a justice system, how to have a banking system, how to have trade, because this is a suburb in Britain. This is not like a town that can farm itself. It's got to have importing, exporting, all these things that people did not consider. How to get your water. I mean, there's a whole scene where the town runs out of water. And so, of course, the lads steal water, and there's a whole scene of them with a hose in the pit, and then the town gets water and everyone's happy. There will be water, would be filthy. It's being put into a dirt pit, by the way. But there is water. You have even a guy coming in as a Burgundian who's kind of like their representative. It's a very sweet movie. It's not my favorite of the Ealing Studios movies. That would probably be A Kind Hearts and Coronets, just because I think that movie is outrageous and beautiful and sadistic in a weird way. You're following the villain who is a working poor man who's killing off all the rich family. And you do have sympathy for him, even though you know what he's doing is wrong. But at the same time, you're like, yeah, Alec Guinness doesn't need to live, even no matter what role he's playing. But I do like Stanley Holloway as a character actor. I mean, Margaret Rutherford is kind of amazing. I need to actually watch the Miss Marple movies because they just sound now. I just want Margaret Rutherford running around solving crime. And yeah, it kind of leads to a very quick conclusion. Okay, this is a 1949 movie, and you already can tell that they join Britain at the end, and the people are throwing rations at them, and so they can be happy. And again, and there are airdrops happening. I don't think this movie predicted anything, but it's kind of predicting stuff. It's kind of amazing how when they were campaigning for Brexit, that no one considered, right, we have to rewrite all our importing, exporting laws, and wait, Northern Ireland might become a problem with the border, because Ireland, the Republic, is going to still stay in the EU. It's like these things that came up that no one ever thought would now be a problem. It's like, yay, we're left, we're free. Oh shit, we need to import half our shit. Like, it's amazing how quickly law and order, like who's going to run shit, who's going to do what, how are you going to get stuff in? I mean, it's all good to say that you're not following the ration cards anymore. It's all good to say that, but the realities are very, very different. I mean, this was very much a post-war propaganda movie. That's what it is. It's fine. It's about building British unity after something horrific. And Britain was still struggling in to get goods after the Second World War. Places had been destroyed far more so than the First World War, even though more people died in the First World War. I mean, both events were kind of catastrophic. But Wicked Little Letters and Letters to Flamenco are dealing with things of an aftermath of a huge epic war event that was not, Britain got bombed quite significantly in the Second World War, didn't in the First. But there's this kind of change in the air of how people feel, and both are reflecting that. And yeah, I would say Wicked Little Letters is very much about, even though it is about women's suffrage, still very much about the unity of women and of bringing women more into a public society. They are not indoor women who are being very good, who quote the Bible all the time, like Olivia Colman is doing in Wicked Little Letters. She's not performing to the crowds of her goodliness and womanliness. And this is kind of the same thing. What does it mean to be British? And I think it's a really interesting little movie. In the States, this is on Tubi. So I'm assuming in other countries it's on Tubi as well. So this is definitely one to check out. As I said, it's an hour and 24 minutes. It's not going to take up much of your time, and it's sweet. And then please go watch Kind Hearts and Coronets, because that movie is absolutely awesome. And there's a reason why it's considered one of the great British comedies. Finally, we are going to go to the 90s, which is kind of another period of these movies. I mean, I could have chosen anything from Local Hero, which is 1983, which I think is doing a very similar thing. I think you could have easily double this with Whiskies Galore to sort of look at, again, a Scottish kind of version of this. I think you could easily, I could have easily have done The Full Monty, which goes hand in hand with Brassed Off in a lot of ways.
No bloody money, no bloody job, and what are you going to do? Suckle! Bit clumsy with the crockery, your Sandra.
Ooh! 10 years ago, you were so full of fight. Now you just blow your bloody trumpet.
It's a bloody euphonium!
Gloria Mullins. You had her. Grand bus station.
They were top half only.
Do you want to come up for a coffee?
I don't drink coffee.
I haven't got any.
Say no to bloody blackmail and yes to keeping this bit alive!
Okay, lads. Let's do it.
The 90s were very much dealing, they weren't dealing with war. They were dealing with the ending of Margaret Thatcher, who was her own momentous event, I have to say. There's, I mean, I could have chosen Billy Elliot. There's a whole string of feel-good comedies in the 90s that were dealing with the fallout of the 1984 miners' strikes, 1984-1985 miners' strikes, and kind of the fallout of that and the massive joblessness in these certain communities and these small towns that relied on the mining, on the mines, disappeared. Now, I'm not going to pretend I understand the political machinations of why this was done, why they were doing it. I know Margaret Thatcher, when as soon as she got in, had it out for like, oh no, we're not doing any mines. That, we're not doing it. As many, I'm sure, a miner who was in 1984 in the Union would say, started a war with the North. And when you see footage, I mean, I also could have done Pride, actually, Pride from 2014, which is also about the inclusion of the queer community, the LGBT community going in and supporting the miners in 1984, because this was a huge strike. There was no strike pay. These men, these families were had no money to provide anything. So it was like Plominkov, like going, well, we've kind of cut ourselves off. Now what do we do? And it is a fight for their identity of their jobs, which go hand in hand with these, the Northern Yorkshire. I don't know the history as well as I should. I do have vague memories of TV things because it went on for 10 years. The shutdowns just went on from not just 1984, it went into the 90s. So I do have vague remember of TV reports, that kind of thing. Brassed Off, directed by Mark Herman. Colliery Brass Band. Now, I don't feel bad about mispronouncing this because there's a joke at the end of the movie of this where there's at Royal Albert Hall where the announcer trying to get them on stage is messing it up as well. So many, many people who weren't living in Yorkshire were messing it up. This is about an actual brass band who was funded and made up of a lot of the miners, South Yorkshire, whose coal mine was being in the process, set in 93, I think, was in the process of being shut down. All the things that go along with that. It, of course, stars a very young-looking Ewan McGregor, Tara Fitzgerald, the amazing Pete Postlethwaite, who, okay, this is the reason why I wanted to actually chose this. It wasn't because of the other things. I could have easily used the Full Monty and used the exact same examples, but Full Monty may have Tom Wilkinson, but Brass Off has Pete Postlethwaite. And that man is a force of nature in his movies. You do not take his eyes off him. This also stars Stephen Tompkinson, who uses his very sad eyes to full effect in this movie. Jim Carter, who I now kind of wish I knew who Jim Carter was before Downton Abbey. This also has the great Sue Johnston and Mary Healy playing the brass band's groupies, which delighted me no end. But yeah, this is a very typical 90s cozy comedy because it is about the death of an industry and very sad man. Wicked Little Letters is about female empowerment and getting them into how society works and the power structures and not having to play these roles that were expected of women. Things like The Full Monty and especially Brassed Off, as I said, they go hand in hand, are very much about male empowerment and how when you took away their jobs, you took away everything, their self-worth. In these movies, a wife will always leave someone because these men are ruined. And this movie is probably actually the angriest of the three. That is what surprised me. This is the kind of movie that is out to make you feel sad, angry, happy, laugh, and then will just make you bawl at the end. This is what it's designed for. This is kind of that crowd pleaser that is taking your emotions and playing them like Pete Postlethwaite conducting his brass band. Like, that is what this movie is doing, and very much on purpose. It's like the Full Monty. You're going through with these guys. They're all so sad. They're trying their best to try and find a new identity. And so they want to be, and to be the center of attention again, they start this Chippendale act, and they are just average dad bods aplenty, which is kind of why I love the Full Monty. And when they do their act at the end, it is joyous. It is great. They're back. They have sense of worth. This one, not so much. It is a very pointed attack on not just Thatcher's government, but the guy who came afterward, which I'm John Major. John Major's government. But it is very much an attack on those two things. It is, these guys survived the 1984 strikes. They have not been, but they have never been able to come back to their full selves. They're constantly broke. They have lost everything. They don't want to fight anymore. To fight is just too hard again. And we are moving into the 90s. We are in the 90s. We're moving into the 90s. And the 90s is a very different beast from the 80s. I know a lot of politicians want to kind of get that forgotten suburban vote. They keep talking about it. Like, you've been forgotten. We're going to get you back. We're going to appeal to what we think your values are. This is kind of that movie. But in saying that, it's hard not to love it. I mean, especially with that cast, it's Stephen, whenever Stephen Thompson cries, I'm crying. I mean, the man has just, his eyes are just born to bawl on screen, and you just to be sad with him. No one plays a sad sack like Stephen Tompkinson. But yes, it is essentially this brass band. Their conductor, Pete Postlethwaite, is very excited about the semifinals at the beginning, even though their coal mine is in target to be shut down. You have Gloria, played by Tara Fitzgerald, who comes in and wants to be a part of the band, but she is also working for management. But she says she's actually trying to help. She's writing a report to say, look, this has potential to be here. You should keep the mine, even though everyone is not happy once they find out. But again, like the Full Monty, this movie is about this small town community, which will be, I mean, once you get into Full Monty, the steel mill in Yorkshire has closed, and you already have these men who cannot get a job, and they're having to rely on their wives and their girlfriends for support and income, and that will just not stand. And it's, that is what the, and that is a lot of the 90s comedies in the 90s British comedies in the 90s, especially when you're dealing with the impacts of Thatcherism. But the performances are great, especially Pete Postlethwaite. Shit, there is a speech he gives at the end, which is like a gut punch. He delivers it with such force and anger. I think he actually believed he's going, yeah, no, this is the speech I want to give. Because he was a Yorkshire man. He was born in the North. He was grew up in a very poor family. He knew these people in these communities really, really well. Tara Fitzgerald and Ewan McGregor kind of stick out like a sore thumb because they are not Northern. Well, Ewan McGregor is. He's Scottish. He's very Northern, but he's not Yorkshire. But when you look at the likes of Jim Carter, who is incredible in this. Yeah, Stephen Tompkinson, as I said, who is the saddest man on the planet, and he's just like a sad bear. Like, you just want to give him a hug. They actually had members of the actual brass band come, and they were actually playing the actual music. There was a brass band fad for a while after this movie, because this movie did really, really well. But this movie likes to point out how many mines were shut between 1984 and 1994. It was a very big British issue. It still kind of is. The ghosts of this still have not gone away, and I don't think they'll ever go away in British society. But it is as I said, this is a movie that will conduct you to the emotions that it wants you to feel on any specific moment. It's very Victorian in a way. I mean, you've got the coal mines, you've got the small kind of society, you have debt collectors constantly on these guys' back. So they're running around trying not to pay bills. You have Pete Postlethwaite, who probably has the black lung, but it looks like he has consumption. And it's just, it's all those beats. Not one sad urchin running around. If not that, it would be fully Dickens. But yeah, it's kind of, again, all these movies are really great Sunday afternoon movies and are worth a watch because there's a coziness to them, but there's something baked in what they want to say. Brass Off is probably the most pointed of these, especially when you get to Pete's Postlethwaite's speech at the end, which is like a hammer on you, and you're just like, yeah, I was crying because they were playing William Tell at Albert Hall. And we took so much to get there. And then you pull this on me? Movie. And it's all very designed. Like, it's very, I mean, all three of these movies are very designed to make you feel very, very specific ways. That's what a feel-good movie is. A feel-good movie is to take you on a journey, but to make sure that you leave the theater smiling. In Rust Off case, it's you're weeping as well. And yeah, I think, again, it's all about the performances in these movies. It's all about the amazing character actors Britain has and deploying them really well. And all of them, yes, Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley are character actors, and they are some of the finest we have at the moment. But no, if you really want a Sunday afternoon where you kind of go on this roller coaster of just giggling emotions, yeah, this is a really good one to go for. But absolutely go see Wicked Little Letters, seek it out. It is a good time. And again, take your mom, take your grandma, and then just start giggling every single time fucker comes up. Because the British are the one. Actually, no, Australia is the best at swearing. I will give Australia that. Second best is Britain, and they do use it really well. I'll end it there, but I hope I sort of conveyed this thing of how British comedies work and how they started with the Ealing comedies. Probably started before then. I am aware of that. I just decided to start with Ealing. And this kind of sentiment that goes through the whole of the three of this secession from society, but then integrating back in. And what does that actually mean? And what a united Britain actually might look like. As usual, Shock and Awe can be found on all the pods, Reading Geek or Shock and Awe on all social media. And we will be back at some point with another quickie review. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.